This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
For years, I was so fed up with shampoo, I just stopped washing my hair. I quit completely. I was so sick of poofy, frizzy, limp hair, distorting my natural oils. Until a few months ago, I found Modern Mammals, and it changed everything. And by the way, right now you can visit modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. So check that out. So look, I heard about this through the podcast, and before I agreed to advertise, they sent it to me and I was reluctant. But let me tell you, I should not have been. This stuff is absolutely magical. My hair felt better, smelled way better, and most importantly, looked better. And I know it will do the same for you as well. It doesn't have those hair-ruining chemicals like other products, and it doesn't leave any leftover residues. It works. Don't believe me? Go read their awesome reviews online as well. Go to modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use our promo code LSS so they know we sent you.
How's it going? Welcome to another edition of Lead Singer Syndrome. My name is Shane Told. I am a lead singer myself in a band called Silverstein. And on this podcast, I interview other lead singers about what it's like to front a band. And this is actually episode 44, if you can believe it. So maybe I don't know. Do I have to say that every episode? Tell you what the podcast's about? Is that just a waste of time? I don't know. But I feel like it's a good way to start. So that's where I'm going to start again on this episode. We have a great show this week. I talked to my old friend, dear friend, Brendan Murphy of Counterparts. They are a hardcore band, melodic hardcore band. I don't know what they call this music anymore. It doesn't matter. They're awesome. I'm sure most of you people know what's going on with Counterparts. They are one of the up-and-coming bands, I think, in the scene right now. We talk a lot about that. They've been a band for 10 years. I was shocked when he told me that. That's crazy. He's only 25. But they got a lot of big stuff coming up right now. They're going on tour with Parkway Drive, which is massive for them. You know, and we talk a lot about how they came up kind of being underdogs in the scene a little bit, and I get his take on that. There's a lot of music industry talk in this episode, so I hope that's interesting for you. It's something that isn't really talked about. I mean, we talk about things like support tours and how much bands get paid and stuff, which maybe as a music fan, you don't really care about that stuff. Maybe, you know, you're just want to go to the show, see the band, and you don't really care about, you know, the financial ramifications of these things or how this all works on a hierarchy of bands. But I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that do find it kind of fascinating. And especially, you know, my friends that are in other bands, I'm sure will love this episode. So stay tuned because it's coming. Right now, I'm chilling in my office here, getting ready to go on a pretty cool tour. Silverstein is going to China for the very first time. We're doing a festival in Shanghai. Nelly was supposed to be the headliner, but unfortunately Nelly couldn't get a Chinese visa, so he canceled. So I'm not sure who's headlining now. It looks like it's pretty much us and like 40 Chinese bands, so that should be interesting for us, but I'm really looking forward to seeing Shanghai. After that, we're jumping over to Japan for 5 shows with Cold Rain, which is going to be amazing. I am super excited. If you are a listener in Japan, which I don't know how many listeners I have in Japan. I haven't looked at my stats in a while, but if you're one of those people listening, please come out, come say hi. It's always nice to be able to speak to people in Japan, because if you've ever been to Japan, it's a bit difficult with the language barrier. It really is tough over there. In other Silverstein news, we have kind of a world tour happening with Memphis Mayfire and Devil Wears Prada. Maybe not the world. USA and Europe and UK. So, I mean, you know, a lot of the world is covered there. A decent chunk. So if you're in those regions, please check it out. If you go to silversteinmusic.com, you can figure out where we're going to be and if we're going to be in your town. And if you can come down to the show. And we would love to have you. And as always, your feedback is welcomed. If you want to get in touch, we have very, very many ways you can do that. Right now, it's all about Snapchat. I am actually good at getting back to people on there for some reason. So please add me on Snapchat. It's the douchiest handle ever. It's Real Shane Told. And I feel like I have to tell the story of why. So I got into the Snapchat game a little bit late. And, you know, my social media is Shane Told for everything because my name is fairly unique. On Instagram, it's Shane Told. On Twitter, it's Shane Told. So I tried to sign up. And not only did I find it was taken on Snapchat, but somebody was using it and apparently like macking on chicks on Snapchat. So I decided to be clever. I would get Real Shane Told just to kind of stick it to that person. And I don't really like the name now. But anyways, hey, add me. Real Shane Told. Also, of course, we're on Twitter. At Lead Singer Syn, S-Y-N, Instagram, at Lead Singer Syndrome. We have a Facebook page, which you can search or whatever, it'll come up. And, of course, if you just want to email me, you can write as long a message as you want. I will definitely read it. I am horrible at getting back to people on email, but I do read all my email. So check that out. It's leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. And if you want to support the show, if you buy things online, if you use Amazon specifically, if you use our Amazon affiliate link, anything that you buy, whether it's a small purchase or a big purchase, our show gets 4%. And that stuff does add up. It does keep the lights on around here, so to speak. So check that out. All you do is go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. It brings you right to the Amazon homepage. And you just log in as normal. You won't even know anything's different. But when you do make a purchase, we do get some kickback in the form of 4%. So check that out again, leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. And one more thing, if you like the show, please write a review on iTunes and make sure you're subscribed. If you're listening to this on SoundCloud or like, I don't know, somewhere weird, just make sure that, boom, you hit the subscribe button. If you're subscribed, if you write reviews for the show, the reason I ask you to do this is because it does help us with the rankings. It helps more and more people find out about this podcast. And obviously, the bigger this podcast gets, the better. You know, to see this thing grow, we'll have more and more things going on. It'll be very exciting. And yeah, I'm just really excited that you guys have been so rad to me listening to this. All the feedback's been so great. So thank you so much for the support. It really does warm my little Canadian heart. Also, as we mentioned in this podcast a little bit, I did put out on my record label, Verona Records, the first Counterparts album. And I do still have vinyl of that, both on orange and blue, and CDs and posters. So you can check that out if you want at veronarecords.com. A lot of people think that that's out of print. It's not. I still have them. So check it out, veronarecords.com. Anyways, hey, let's jump into it. We got a great episode. Here it is, my conversation with Brendan Murphy of Counterparts. Hey, dude.
Yo, what up?
How you doing?
I'm good. Just got back from the goddamn eye doctor, so I can't see shit. But aside from that, I'm pretty good.
Really? The goddamn eye doctor. What do they do to your eyes? Or
you know how like they do that? Like you get your test where they're like, okay, which is better, one or two, like all that, and then they give you those drops that dilate your pupils like huge. That's what I'm like. Like I got home not too long ago, so it's just like you're not supposed to drive, and I didn't have anybody to take me, so I was like, all right, I guess I'm just fucking doing this. So
oh, man. You're
like, I'm like driving home squinting, like you like I don't know. If I were to get pulled over, I would have been thrown in jail. Like they'd think I'm like, you know, on LSD or some shit. Like, my pupils were like, they were huge. But I'm good now. I made it home safely. I only hit a couple cars, so fuck.
Only a few cars, yeah. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Who cares? Yeah.
The cops ran off fast enough. The cops won't find you. It's fine.
Yeah, well, no, they never guess because there's a police station at the top of my street. So fuck it. They don't think to look down here.
Exactly.
I'll hide in my 4 foot above ground pool in the backyard. If
it's like in Grand Theft Auto when you just drive into the paint shop and they paint your car a different color and you're good to go.
Yeah, yeah, no problem. Exactly.
Nice, yeah. Dude. Nice. So you wear glasses or contacts or?
I wear glasses every now and then. Like I wear them when I'm like usually when I'm driving.
Yeah.
I can't do contacts. That's like another thing. It's like another whole thing with the eye doctors. Like, I get really weirded out by like eye stuff. Like, like seeing people put contacts in or like,
yeah,
you know, people who have like bloodshot eyes, like it like freaks me out.
No, totally.
So them trying to put the drops in my eyes, a whole ordeal. Then they do the stupid air blow test thing. And like, I hate that. It's like, I was posting about it on Twitter. I was like, I'd legit rather just like wake up to five bodybuilders kicking my ass and have to do that.
I'm lucky, man. I haven't had any vision issues at all, and both
that's
my
sick.
Parents wear glasses, but my sister and I were both fine, and I'm just waiting for that one day when like I can't see shit. But so
yeah,
far, like
kind of like that was like me. Like I had when I was growing up, I remember they like made a big deal about it because I had like 20/10 vision or whatever. Like it was like better than 20/20.
Right.
And then I don't know what happened. It was just like, I mean, it was probably like, you know, right around the time that like MySpace was really big. So I was on the computer a lot. And then it was just like, then my eyes are, you know, my eyes are shot. So I'm like, I'm trying to bill Tom for my glasses. He can
yeah,
pay
bill
for my,
Tom, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. He's rich enough. He can pay for my
Where
for my Ray-Bans.
Where is that guy, I wonder? I wonder what Tom from MySpace is doing right now.
I looked it up not too long ago. He like he's a photographer. And like, I mean, he sold MySpace for, you know, millions or billions or God knows how much.
Yep.
But yeah, now he just kind of like hangs out and is like a photographer.
Sure.
And just travels all over and takes pictures because, like, I guess he wanted to do that, and now he's got the money too. So.
Well, he knows a lot of people, that's for sure. He's got a lot of friends.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah, he's got a lot. Yeah, he's in real good standing with all of them too. They're always like he's high up in the top eight. So
oh my god, dude, man. Well, that's the thing. Like, MySpace is something that I don't even know if. You know, like you know, you're a younger band and younger generation, and you have a lot of younger fans. I just wonder if anybody realizes, like, from that generation, like how big MySpace was, and especially how important for music it was.
I don't think they have a clue, man. Well, honest to God, like that was, like, seriously, the MySpace era, like, you know, that time, like the early, like it was what, like it was really popular from what, around like 2000. Like 2003 to,
I'd
guess
like
about
oh,
like two,
maybe like 04 to like 08 kind of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I remember like around the time that we put out Profits, we like,
MySpace was still a thing, man.
Yeah, it was still a thing, but that was right when we were like, oh shit, like we have to make like a Facebook now and like have like a Facebook band page and stuff like that. And I remember it being, you know. I remember the change, and
yeah,
it's crazy. I really don't think that kids, you know, younger kids now, like the kids who are like listening to, you know, I would think like for a lot of the, like, you know, for Silverstein, for example, a lot of your fan base like grew up in that time, and they, you know what I mean? Like if you ask, like you're at a Silverstein show and you scream like MySpace, like everyone in the room is going to know what's going on.
Right.
At our show, I think people would be like, what the fuck? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know what that is.
That's
like,
for old people.
Is that like LinkedIn? You know, it's like,
but yeah, but the significance of MySpace though, I mean, you have to remember that at that time there wasn't really anything else. Like Twitter didn't exist yet. There was no Instagram. There was no Snapchat, you know, and Facebook was there, but it was still like it was a smaller thing and it wasn't really for music.
Facebook was very I go to university, like I need to like get notes from this person who sits behind me, so I'm gonna find them and contact them. Whereas like MySpace was you know, I remember that was like literally that's how I would meet people, you know what I mean? Like you would see your friends talking to somebody and then you'd be like, oh shit, like okay, well, I went to their profile and their profile song was like 7861.
Right.
Or like, oh, you know, or like, oh no, it was Metricroid. Like, never mind. I'm not going to send them a friend request, like that kind of shit. And then, you know what I mean? So, and like, that's how you met,
yeah.
You know? And like, I remember when I first went to high school, like I started high school in 2005 and, there used to be like the high school pages and there'd be like a moderator and, you know, like you could log on and see, you know, like kids from your school talking and, you know, about, and every now and then you'd be like, okay, that guy's got like the emo hair. So I gotta try and find him on day one. 'Cause then maybe we won't get initiated or whatever, like that kind of stuff. But
yeah, man.
But yeah, it was honestly, it was, that was like one of the coolest times for music, I think. And then I think about like all the, you know, like just finding new bands. Like, yeah. Like I made a joke about about top eights, but that's literally how you would find your favorite bands. You know what I mean? You would, okay, well, you know, Taken has like this band Shai Hulud in their top eight. So I'm going to go listen to them. Oh, this is actually sick. Oh, Misery Signals. What's that? You know? And like,
absolutely.
Yeah. And it was just the coolest, like it was like Last.fm and Facebook and all those kind of like rolled into one.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was no YouTube either at that time. I mean, at least, yeah, or exactly. If there was, it wasn't like so music driven. Like they didn't have, like, you couldn't just listen to audio like you can now.
Yeah, I remember,
you know, so.
Yeah, I remember YouTube being like, you know, I remember, I'm trying to think, like fucking 2005, 2006 maybe. I think like, I don't know. I'll check when YouTube was created and I'll try and align my story real quick. But, but it was like sometime in the mid late 2000s when it came out and I started seeing like, oh shit, there's like a, you know, like it was like before for funny videos, I would have to go on like E-Bomb's World and, you know, like sites like that.
Totally.
Or you would have to like, you know, try and download a music video off Kazaa and you would get something terrible and you'd be like, oh shit, like how do I send this to people? I guess I can send it to them on MSN or AIM or whatever.
I know, it's just funny, man.
You know what I mean? Like it would be like, oh shit, like there's a video of like some guy getting blown up and I think it's, I don't know if it's real or not, like that kind of stupid shit that you watch when you're a kid. But or an adult, I don't fucking know. Like lately I've been watching a lot of dog videos. That's pretty much what that's up my alley. A lot less depressing shit as I'm getting older.
Let's talk about your social media presence. For all the people that want to follow you on Twitter, what's your handle?
The handle's Brendan905. It's Brendan 905.
Okay. Now you guys got to follow Brendan on Twitter, especially because you're a pretty funny dude on there.
Thank you.
And
a lot of it comes from boredom. Really?
Really? Like, okay.
Yeah. So like every now and then, you know, some people will ask, they'll be like, you know, I'm trying to, you know, like, yeah, like you're really funny and stuff like that. It's just like, yeah, honestly, it's like in the time it took for my like bagel to pop out of the toaster, I thought of something really stupid and just posted it.
Right. And you don't care. Like basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, that's the thing is I think that, you know, a lot of guys in bands, you know, especially like serious bands, like they get worried about posting that. Like, you know, every day there's some new, like someone will tweet and be like, oh, like it's so weird that, you know, I listen to Counterparts and the lyrics are so
exactly,
you know, meaningful. And then I go to, you know, Brendan's Twitter and it's like a fucking nut house. And it's like, yeah, but you know, I don't really take myself seriously. Like if I walked around in the same mind frame that I am in when I'm writing Counterparts lyrics, I'd be severely bummed out every single day. So, you know what I mean? It's like, I need that little touch of like, okay, I'm going to try and make some people laugh real quick.
Right.
And, well, and I love it. And it's the fastest way to get, you know, if I'm with my friends and I think of something stupid and we're all like, you know, sitting in my basement, like playing fucking cards or something. And we like someone makes a joke and we're all laughing about it. And I'll post on Twitter. And then it's just like, you know, it's like, yo, that's really funny. Like, how can I share that with a bunch of people and make them laugh? Like, okay, I'll just put it on Twitter.
Well, that's interesting. But, like that was totally my question. Like, I guess what kids ask you, it's the same question I had,
yeah.
But you know, it's kind of a funny thing because there's kind of two sides, I think, to everybody's life, which is like serious and not serious, you know, and nobody's
sure.
Serious
yeah,
all the time. No one's not serious all the time.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, you know, you talk about, well, it's important for you to write lyrics that are serious, that are, you know, emotional, that you're trying to help people.
yeah, of course.
You know, give people a sense of hope. But at the same time, when you're not doing that, it's also important for you to make people laugh or make people have a good time or make, you know. So in some ways, it's kind of like you're helping people out regardless of which side of your personality it is.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that that's, you know, that is really cool for me. Like I love, you know, I love the fact that I can write lyrics to a song that, you know, they mean it means a whole lot to me. And, you know, hearing something like, hey, you know, like that song really helped me when I was going through a hard time. Like I bring that. That's like a big reason why we're the type of band that we are.
Yeah.
But then also I love making people laugh. Like I love hanging out with my friends and joking and, you know, like just cracking everybody up. Like that's like the most fun that I have.
Right.
So,
well, and
you know,
stage,
if I can do both.
Sure. And your stage persona is like, I mean, I guess with you, to be honest, like you never really know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is very dependent on, it's dependent on mood. It's dependent on, you know, how, like if we got a bottle of Jameson before the show or not, like that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, it's dependent, but, the one thing that I always try and do, and like I, you know, I think like we even do this as a band, like whether it's, you know, like a subconscious thing, or if it's just, you know, like we don't really try, but we just want to be like a real band. You know what I mean? Like we don't want to have people at the shows and like, you know, I'm not going to go on stage and put on this like big show and be like, hey, we're, you know, we're this serious band. Like if I, you know, if some guy's like fucking, like I can see anything that's happening through the night, and I can, you know, before one song I can be like, hey, you know, this one's about, for example, ghosts, like my grandfather with Alzheimer's, and then I've like, you know, turned around and been like, this one's about my friend Kenny, he's over there, like, you know, like just like stupid shit like that. And it's really like you know, like it's kind of, you kind of just like work, I don't know, you like work off your surroundings, right? Like yes. If someone's moshing in like a fucking hot dog costume, like I'm gonna make fun of them for it. You know what I mean? I'm not gonna like not like I'm mad that they're doing that, but it's just like, okay, this is like, that's something funny. Like, you know, there's been times where I've had to, I guess, like stop the show and kind of yell at kids for fighting or like, you know, hitting people for no reason, like that kind of shit. But then there's also times where, you know, I've like literally fell face first off stage in New Haven, Connecticut, I think it was.
Yep.
At that venue, like right downtown, real close to Yale.
Toad's Place?
I think so. Like it's like a big like theater. I can't remember the name of it. I know there's like a Shake Shack real close though.
okay.
But yeah, when we were on Common Vision last summer, I like fell like on my ass and I just like couldn't even finish the song because I was laughing so hard. And then I immediately went into this big thing about like, yo, if anybody's parents are like lawyers, like I think I might sue the venue, and just watching like all the security guards turn around and like start sweating and they're like, oh shit, and all that stuff. I thought it was the funniest thing in the world. But yeah, you know what I mean? Like you kind of just, sure, you kind of just feel it out. Like there's nights when I'll be very serious and I'll, you know, I actually like have, I guess not like an agenda, but I have, it's like, okay, I want to talk about this before we play the song because it means a lot. And then there's times where I'll, you know, I'll literally like, I'll yell fucking Austin Powers quotes before a breakdown. Like, cause it's just, it's,
right.
You know, it really just depends on the mood. And if I think people are going to like it, whether they're going to laugh or they're going to be like, oh, goddamn, like that's really cool that, you know, oh, I didn't know that's what that song was about. That's actually really cool that he's saying that. If I can, either reaction to me is pretty cool. And I think that's just what I try to do every day, right? Like I'm sure there are people who just see my Twitter and go like, yo, this dude's an actual dumbass. But then they'll meet me and I'll have a conversation and they'll be like, oh shit, I thought you were like brain dead or whatever. I'm like, no, unfortunately, I mean, to an extent, yeah, of course,
yes,
but
yes.
You know, but I can definitely, you know, I can hold my own and kind of give off a different vibe. You know, I normally save it for, it's like, oh, I have to meet this girl's parents that I'm into. Like, okay, I'll be the smart one today. And then after a week and a half, it's like, yo, I'm your dumbass son-in-law. It's good. But
right. Well, I mean, this whole idea of, you know, keeping it real on stage, just kind of going with the flow, I really think that it not only just stems from, you know, just hardcore and like, and all that, you know, but
for sure,
just the way we grew up. And
yeah,
for people that don't know, you know, you and I grew up in the same scene. I mean, I'm a lot older than you, but we grew up in the same, you know, your Twitter is Brandon905.
Same area.
And we called it the 905 scene, which is the area code in the western suburbs of Toronto and Hamilton, where you're from.
Yep.
And you know,
that whole all the nice places, like Hamilton, Burlington, Oakville,
right?
St. Catharines, like, you know, even like, because I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that when I was in high school, you know, and I was, you know, and I was starting, and it was just like, okay, I'm in like the ninth grade. I really didn't have a way to just like tell my parents, like, oh, hey, I'm gonna go to the cathedral and see a show in Toronto. And
yeah.
They'd be like, what the fuck? No way.
Oh yeah.
But telling them like I'm going to the Formac in Burlington to see a show. They're like, oh, do you need a ride? It's only 10 minutes away. It's
right,
like, oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
No, well, that's a big part of why we had such a great scene in the suburbs, for sure.
For sure. It was actually insane. Like,
it was actually insane.
The stories I tell people
absolutely. Like, I mean, I will never downplay how amazing the scene was, all the bands and everything, and how much it means to me. And but basically, back to, like, what I'm trying to say and what I'm trying to ask you is, like, you know, obviously, Counterparts was influenced by like bands like mine, bands like you mentioned Taken, who are from Southern California, but kind of basically from Hamilton because they were so
big.
Yeah,
I think it's weird. I saw Ray post a photo like last night that's just like, oh, like Taken at Sonic Onion Basement, Hamilton, Ontario.
Yeah, I saw the photo, and the photo has George and Dallas from Alexis like in the front row, and then another like who's of like bands, and it's like, you know, Dallas has his shirt off, like, you know, that really speaks of a time when like bands were watching each other's bands the thing is like you're influenced by these bands. I was influenced by bands before, and the thing was like there was no fashion, there was no,
of course,
like no one cared, there was no like planning out sets, there was no lights shows, there was no fucking sound, crazy PA, nobody had an ego riser, there was like nothing like that, and every show was off the cuff. I remember Ray Harkins from Taken, who's also the, you know, 100 Words or Less podcast host.
Yep.
I remember him telling a story of the last time they played at the Oakville Pine Room when he literally shit his pants on stage. He told a story about after having a Lick's veggie burger, it made him shit himself on stage. So those are the kinds of things that influenced your band and my band. And I think that that's what's led us into basically not faking it, not being, you know, not having this like, you know, rock star agenda. Because let's face it, bands these days, there's no local scene. They're growing up. They're seeing big bands put on big light shows. And that's what they're trying to emulate.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Even like, you know, not to say that we, you know, that we like started like Counterpart specifically, not to say that we started like, you know, we were like ahead of our time by any means. But, you know, we had like a couple years on some of these other bands, like local bands in the area. Right. And I remember the first time I went to a show and the band had lights,
right,
and it was just like, you know, and they had like the ego riser things and all that stuff. And I remember being like, oh, holy shit. Like that's fucking nuts. And then it seemed like, you know, a couple weeks later, every single band, we'd play a local show, like we'd hop on like opening some show, and every other band on the bill, you know, they had their own lights and stuff, but then you turn around and it'd be like, okay, like, you know, you'd go to the room where the gears are, like the gear stored and where people keep their deads and shit. And there'd be all these like lights and fucking ego risers and all that. And then people would come up and be like, okay, so who has gear we can use? And I was just like, well, what the hell? Like, shouldn't you buy that? Shouldn't you buy that first?
Like,
you
your
know
priority,
what I mean?
Your priorities are kind of fucked up here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think that, like you said, I think it's directly because of, you know, growing up and only seeing these huge bands and being like, well, I saw, you know, this band play the closest major city to me and they had like a backdrop and lights and all this stuff. And like that must be, you know, that must be it. So then you have these younger bands like focusing on that, where, you know, where they should just be focusing on writing cool songs that they're proud of.
Exactly.
You know? But, and I mean, I don't even like, I don't hate on that stuff now. Like, I think, you know, I think it's a little silly when we go on tour and there'll be, you know, not even in like an offensive way, but like a band opening like, you know, a bit like a, like an opening band, like local band opening up for the package. And, you know, they've got like the scrims and they've got all this shit. And it's just like, man, you know what I mean? Like, you kind of have like a 15-minute set. Like, you know, you're going through all this trouble and people aren't even through doors yet. Like when I see, you know, when we both played Webster Hall recently and you guys and Census Fail and everybody was upstairs and we were downstairs, like when I see the show that you guys have and like Census Fail, like the lights that you guys do, I'm like, fuck yeah. You know what I mean? Like I see that and I'm like, this is so sick. Like you guys are giant bands. You have the money to do it. Like, fuck yeah. And you like, you got big because you guys wrote sick songs and you guys put out amazing records, not because you had lights. Like no one's at the show being like,
Like,
yo,
like,
I got a record deal. Like which band has the brightest lights here? Like, let's fucking go.
It's like some people are trying to do their career backwards. Like they're starting with this big production and then they're like, oh yeah, we got to write songs, you know?
Yeah.
And,
and
I think,
like,
you know, it's an interesting thing.
I've got the live show mapped out, but we just got to pay this producer to write our record for us.
And that's a real thing. We won't get into that.
It's crazy.
But like with your band, I mean, it's funny, you know, you talk about the other local bands you came up with and how you guys were like a little more, a little ahead of them. And I mean, it's funny because obviously for you guys, it's worked out a lot and you guys have put out four records. You've been very successful. You guys have toured the world with not really any gimmicks.
Not to say that those other bands didn't work hard by any means, because like, you know, we grew up together, we were all helping each other, but I don't really know why us out of all the other Ontario bands at the time. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that when we were getting bigger, like all the biggest Ontario bands were kind of either breaking up or like on that downfall. So kids were just like, oh, well, this band's breaking up, so I guess Counterparts show in a couple of weeks. That's cool.
Downplay like that, man. You guys are a pretty fucking good band. That's funny. Well, everyone else broke up. We're last man standing. It's like you're the last shrimp boat in Forrest Gump.
yeah, straight up. Yeah, it's just like, you know, that's the thing. And I think, you know, I think when bands decide to call it, like, obviously it's one of two things, right? Like it's either there's either tension going on in the band and they fucking hate each other and they hate doing it, or they love doing it, but it's just getting less and less feasible to do it. Like, you know, less and less kids are coming out. So that's always been my thing with Counterparts is like, you know, if we ever grow to hate each other, or we ever, you know, we do a headliner and there's this, and there's, let's say, this many kids coming. Oh, the next one we did, there was actually like less. Oh shit, now it's even less. Like once we notice, like, or like, you know, or just something like that where it's losing steam, I think that's really what it would take. But until then, it's like, man, we all have fun. Like we love playing shows together. I love traveling, so like I'm gonna do it for free for as long as I can.
There you go.
And you know, things, it's all small increments, right? Like that's one thing I would always use to compare our band to some others is like, you know, even bands that we came out around the same time and they shot up, but it's like as quick as they, you know, rose, that's like as quick as they fall.
Absolutely.
Right. And we've been on this like steady little, you know, incline. Like, and I think like, you know, it's like very similar to you guys, right? Like you just kind of start and, rather than like fucking this roller coaster of up down, it's just like this steady grow. And I think as long as we have that, we'll probably still be a band.
Absolutely, man. Well, I want to talk about all that, but first, I want to jump back a little bit and talk about some of the early days, because it's a unique story, and our relationship is unique because you know, some of the guys in my band, you know, well, Paul, who is our drummer. And Richard, who actually runs New Damage Records, who you're assigned to now in Canada, they basically discovered you guys. And
I think it was between them and I think it was like we played
with Paul Mark too.
Yeah,
my band with I Am Committing a Sin.
Exactly. Yeah. When we played, it was I believe it was Oceans and I Am Committing a Sin were on tour.
Yeah.
And I want to say A Sight for Sone Eyes too.
Maybe
that happened before, but yeah, I remember we opened that show and I just remember like last note getting off stage and, you know, all of I'm Committing a Sin, like, you know, Kelly included, who ended up playing, you know, playing for us.
In
it's
your
like
band,
everybody was there like, yo, like that was fucking sick. Like that was awesome. And you know, and then
word got back. Yeah. Because Paul Mark time was playing in I Am Committing a Sin, and he was like, you know, just really close with us. I think he's actually right after that working for us too. Like he was going on tour with us. Now he's in our band. And that's kind of wild. And then obviously I got on board and I put out your first record, Profits, on my label. And that kind of got your start going. And
Of course, we owe you for that one. Seriously, well, like that was it, man.
It's it's still a great record. I mean, I still throw it on from time to time.
Yeah, I still do like it. Aside from the fact, like, I put on this show that we all hate it and stuff like that, but we really don't. It's still like, you know, like obviously, as you know, that was our first record, and we've put out three more, and you know, and an EP. So it's just like, you know, when I think about. When I look at everything, like obviously, you know, like I'm sure it's the same for you guys. Like you guys want to play the newer stuff. It's what you're most proud of at the moment. But yep. when I go back and listen to it, like half of me is like, oh fuck, like that lyric is so stupid. Like, or why do I sound like that? But then at the same time, I'm just like, well, I was 19 years old. So that was 6 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, fuck it. Then it kind of puts it into perspective. Like, oh yeah, I remember writing lyrics to that song. Like, an hour before I went to my high school graduation, like that kind of shit. It definitely makes it a lot cooler, you know, because of the memories attached to it. And I'm sure there's kids that don't listen to Counterparts at all anymore, but then they might hear Goodbye Megaton or Sturdy Wings or something like that and be like, oh shit. Like I remember seeing them play the Casbah in 2000, like at the release show for this in 2010, like that kind of stuff. Right. And it's, you know, I really think it's like a time and place thing. So yeah. we'll always be proud of it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, I'm
sure. Well, as time goes on too, and you know, you guys are, you guys are not a new band anymore. You put out four records, you know.
Of course.
Four records in quite a short period of time, but four records
come
nevertheless.
Come January, we've been a band for 10 years.
Okay, so, well, there you go. Yeah, so it's been a while. You guys are not a new band. And I mean, obviously, like what starts happening, and I can relate to this because my band's been a band for now, we're on our 16th year, but... You start to think more and more about your legacy, and you start think more and more about all these albums you put out, what they mean to you, what they mean to your fans. And each album is a snapshot of you know, a certain time in your life where you were,
of course,
you were writing.
Absolutely.
And we've never really shit talked any of our records except for Arrivals and Departures, but that was more just the recording process than the final product. But I think it's important not only to, embrace who you were, but in some ways still celebrate it. And
of course,
with all the 10-year tours going on and stuff, I have no problem with them. And also, it's important for us to play.
It's every record that I ever loved. Like just getting like packaged up and hand delivered to my door. Like, hey,
sure.
Hey, do you want to come see Under? Like, hey, do you want to come see the U's? Like all these bands that were my favorite bands. And it's, you know, it's like putting them in a little package being like, hey,
I know.
Remember this thing you care about? Like, well, now you're 25 and you can, you know, get fucking Blackout and watch your favorite record of all time in New York City on your birthday. And it's like, oh, sick. Okay.
There you go, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's no. Fuck no. God damn, I lost my train of thought.
We were talking about
the legacy.
The,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. So,
yeah,
so,
yeah, like legacy stuff. And
yeah. So, I mean, in some ways, like, I think like, we try to play something from every record when we play, at least, you know.
For sure.
And for you guys kind of saying, oh, we're going to retire like songs and stuff, I think it's kind of a bad move when you're talking about your legacy. Have you kind of reconsidered that? Because I know for a long time you weren't playing like any stuff from Profits.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think now it's kind of dependent on where we are. Like lately, like, you know, we did like that three little weekend run and we've been throwing, you know, older songs and stuff like that because of the, you know, it's like, okay, we're playing Hamilton, like let's throw like John Locke in or something like that.
Yep.
When it comes time to make the set list, it, like there's so many, like, I'm sure it's the same as you guys, right? Like there's so many different factors that like, we'll be like, okay, you know, what kind of people are in the crowd tonight? Like when we did a tour, when we did that tour with the Acacia Strain and Kubicon and Fit for an Autopsy and all that, it was like, you know, we were like, okay, we're going to play like the really heavy ones. Like, well, we'll do the heavy shit. And then, you know, you turn around and we're like, okay, we're doing Europe with Stick to Your Guns. Like, let's play like the catchier songs. Like, or even the same, you know, the last tour we did with Architects, same thing. Like, okay, there's like 1,000 people who have no idea who we are.
Yep.
Like, let's play the catchy ones to kind of reel them in and see, you know, see if they like it. And, you know, a lot of that goes into it. And I think location's another thing too. Like in Canada, I feel like in Canada we could play something off Prophets every night and, you know, kids will go, like, they'll go nuts for it. But I'm curious to see if, like, you know, for a while we were doing a lot more stuff off Current and a couple of things off Prophets in the US, and they weren't going over as well as when we play new songs.
Yeah.
So I think that that's really like the deciding factor is like where we are, what kind of tour we're on. And like, you know, that's what goes into making the set. But yeah, like for a while, you know, like there's always songs off Prophets and even Current that we're like, yeah, we'll always keep those in the pocket and we'll always jam them and be like, yeah, we can bust that out if need be.
That's great, man. Yeah. So after that, you guys were put out the record with me on Verona, yep. You guys signed to Victory.
Yep.
And it was a bit of a weird thing because, you know, Silverstein, we were on Victory for 4 records.
Of course.
And at that time, we had just, I believe we had finished with Victory and we were...
I think so.
Yeah, I think we hadn't signed to a new label yet, but... And you guys kind of said, like, hey, we're going to sign to Victory. What do you think? And we're like, I mean, you know, like, Victory,
it's
Victory. And you guys kind of did it anyways, despite, you know, my advice and Paul's advice in a way. But that being said, Victory did kind of put you guys on the map in the U.S., in the rest of the world. Because at that time, really, you guys were just doing stuff in Canada. And, you know, my label was exclusively Canadian. You know, obviously you guys have moved on since. You put out, what, two records on Victory? So I'm just kind of wondering, like, what your mindset was then and how it was and just kind of how you – what your kind of journey had been through those Victory years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we, like when we initially signed, there weren't too many options. Like, we were already at the point where we were like, you know, we were getting asked to tour with all these American bands and we were like even playing American shows and stuff like that. So, when the time came and it was like, yo, Victory's giving us an offer, and we had already had time booked with Jay from Defeater to do Current.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd gotten a price for it and we're like, fuck, okay. Like, that's, you know, twice as much as Prophets, but whatever, like, we got to do it. So when we got the Victory offer, we were like, okay, you know, like, we're dumb, but we're not that dumb. It's like, we obviously knew all the stories. We listened to you guys. You know, we've heard, you know, like that like 9-paragraph thing that's going around right now that's like been revised.
Oh, it's back.
Like,
yeah, right.
Where people are sharing. It's like, yo, I literally read that before we signed to Victory. Like,
right.
You know,
but
you still did it
because Victory still like was a big label and they still know how to sell records and you knew you could tour.
Of course. Absolutely. And that was, you know, and that was it. And it was like the offers were coming in and it was like, oh shit, you know, not only are they going to pay for our record, like they're going to buy us our work visas to come tour the US every year. And, you know, now you turn around and it's like, oh, how much are the visas? Like, oh, P1's $5,000. Like, yeah, who cares? Fuck. Yeah, take it. But back then it was like, couple thousand dollars was, you know, that was like the end of the world for a band like us. And, you know, when we had, let alone like $6,000 to do a record or whatever, and then getting it out, and it was just like, shit, you know, there's this label that wants to do all this stuff for us and they only want one album and one option, and, you know, this might not be the worst thing in the world. So, you know, so we ended up doing it, and it was just like, and, you know, at the time, I think we had to choose between Victory or like Media Scare. And we were like, well, Media Scare has every band that sounds like us minus us. So, and Victory doesn't. So let's just, you know, and Victory was a bigger name, obviously. So we're just like, fuck yeah, you know, we're going to do that. And then we did it. and yeah, shortly after, our record was, it was in the US and we were going out with Close Your Eyes a lot. And they were like really popping off.
Right. Because they were Victory too. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like their heyday. So we were touring with them all the time. We were doing, you know, all this stuff, and it's seemingly because of the fact that our record was now available in America. And that's when we started getting a lot of – we would do a lot of tours and people would come up and be like, oh, shit. Like, wait, you guys sit on stage, you're from Canada. Like, oh, I didn't know that. And yeah. It really – like, I think that really drove home the fact that, like, a lot of Americans don't – like, they really don't get exposed to a lot of Canadian bands.
No, you know, they
don't. You see it with – yeah, and, like, you see it with, like, the biggest – like –
Well, let's talk about the Tragically Hip for a second.
Of course, absolutely.
I mean, that is the like the one because, I mean, all the Canadian listeners
That's
listening to this
Canadian
right now are going to know all about that story. About,
for sure.
And no Americans will know it. And they will never even have even heard of the Tragically Hip. And so real quick,
absolutely.
The Tragically Hip is a band from Kingston, Ontario, Canada, that has had decades of success on the radio and playing live and everything. And they're kind of legends. And their singer was recently diagnosed with terminal cancer, and decided they would do one last tour. And the last show they played in their hometown was broadcast on Canadian, you know, CBC, the biggest Canadian station,
like one of the largest news channels.
And the Prime Minister of our country was there. So, and it was very, very emotional. And that's the kind of thing. Where like every Canadian knows this, and no American knows it. And it was like the biggest music story of the year in Canada.
Of course, yeah. And you, like when you think about it, like. I was talking to like, cause our sound, like our TM and like sound guy, his name is Neil, and he works at the venue in Buffalo, Waiting Room.
Yeah.
But he also does like a whole bunch of festivals and stuff like that. And he was, you know, he knew about it. And like, you know, our bass player Brian like lives in Buffalo as well.
Oh,
and,
the border towns are different.
Of course. Yeah. I was going to say like they're completely aware, like, you know, Neil was like, you know, like when we mentioned the Tragically Hit, Neil's like, oh yeah, like I've met, you know, like I've met those guys and I've done sound for them before, and they're really nice, and they, you know, they do like huge shows in Buffalo, they do huge shows in like Michigan, but then outside of that, a lot of people in America like really have no clue who they are, and it's, you know, and, but
true.
then I turn around and I think about a band like you guys, like I would bet money that I don't have on the fact that like. Middle America, Silverstein does a show, Tragically Hip does a show across the street. Like, you guys are having more kids, for
that's
sure.
Absolutely. That's just the
but
way
then
it
I
is.
I think about, like, you know, Trudeau at like, you know, Trudeau's probably not going to, like, they might not broadcast, like, a Silverstein show on CBC, and the Prime Minister might not show up, but that happens for the Tragically Hip in Canada because they're, like, the biggest Canadian band.
Exactly.
You know?
There's a lot of reasons with, you know, Canadian content on the radio and stuff, but the border towns have it too, because like if you take example, 89X like is a huge Detroit radio station like for rock music, and
yep.
they actually broadcast out of Windsor, so they have to play 35% Canadian music. So everybody in Detroit, they hear Tragically Hip, they hear Our Lady Peace, they hear
the Arkells.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know.
And those are bands that probably a lot of our American listeners right now, my American listeners, I should say, actually don't know. Those bands.
For sure.
So it is like very, it is very interesting. And to relate this back to, you know, where we are and where like our careers and success and in terms of like hardcore, like that's always been a thing too. Like for example, we took the approach, we got to start in the US because it's a lot easier to go from the US to Canada than vice versa. And that's the same approach you took.
Definitely.
Whereas you take a band like Alexis on Fire, who had huge amount of success in Canada and
like
everywhere else in the
band.
World. But always struggled in the U.S. because they tried to do it the other way, and it just doesn't work that well, you know, to go that way.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that that was like a giant priority for us. Was like, yo, we're just finally touring a lot. Like, we need to go to other places because, you know, I think the one thing that a lot of bands fall into is like they do really well in Canada to where they're getting paid, you know, like 1,000 maybe more. A night for a show, and then they get an offer to go on an American tour, and it's like, okay, like this is your first American tour, so
$150.
The offer is $100 a night.
Yep.
And you know, a lot of Canadian bands will see that and be like, well, you know, why the fuck would I like spend $1,000 on a work visa and go over the border and do these tours to barely make gas money?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was a big deterrent for a lot of the bigger Canadian bands. But see, the cool thing for us was just like, you know, when we started touring America, we were at most getting paid like $300 to play Canada. So we were just like, oh, well, whatever, the exchange rate, yeah, it's kind of on par. Fuck it, we'll do it. And sure. You know, and that's why we did it. And it wasn't a big deal for us. We were like, yo, either way, we're losing money. So it's January. Let's go tour like Western US and like, you know, let's go tour the West Coast and like hang out in Hollywood and stay at the guys from Volume's house and like have all this fun while our parents are like shoveling snow in the driveway, you know, like that absolutely, kind of stuff. Man. So, you know, and that was really it. Like that was the big, you know, that was like the defining moment was when we were first doing the US. And the weird thing was, when we first started touring the US, people knew who we were, which was very strange because it was even before Victory had put anything out. Like I remember the first show we ever played in the US was in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Wow.
And it was at an AmVets hall with Shai Hulud, 100th, us, and a couple local bands. And I remember playing the show and I remember kids going apeshit for us. And I was just like, yo, this isn't Buffalo. This isn't like Detroit or,
yeah,
you know, a border city. This is fucking on the other side of you know, like this is right below Saskatchewan.
And this is and South like, Dakota, dude. It's not like New York City or Philly or
exactly,
something. Like that's
exactly. Like
that is wild, man. But
Rapid
but you know,
City, South Dakota.
The power of the internet and the power of just the hardcore scene, you know, like
of course. And to bring it back to what we were talking about earlier, MySpace. The reason why I think the main reason why people knew those songs was because of MySpace. And it was just like, you know, and like to tie it all back in, it's like that was a time when that shit was so powerful and it had this gigantic reach, you know, and you didn't have to pay like $20 to get 100,000 more people to be able to see your link on Facebook. Like it was just out there and ready to go. And people were looking for it. People were always looking for new bands and, you know, kids were hungry for new music. And I think that's, I don't know. I feel like a lot of it might be like right place, right time. Like we kind of just popped up right as this style of music was like becoming popular again. And then, you know, and here we're still doing it. So it's,
yeah,
it's a cool feeling.
I'm sure there's always those factors, but I mean, obviously you guys are a talented, you know, real ass band. So don't sell yourself short. I do want to talk a little bit about that though, because you know, you do downplay some of your success and you do downplay some of your own talents almost within your band. And I always felt like, I still feel actually, to be honest, you guys are kind of like underdogs in the scene. And like, you know, for example, you guys have never done Warped Tour.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
just now over the last little while, you guys are starting to do more like, you know, bigger tours, like mainstream tours.
For
like
sure.
You got the one coming up with Parkway Drive.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
and we
like
came
literally
as Romans,
gonna be our
which,
biggest.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Be our biggest North American tour we've ever done.
Right.
Like,
and
you know,
you're talking about you guys have been a band for almost 10 years and just
sure.
kind of now you guys are sort of starting to get into that realm, you know, into that world. Now, I just kind of want to ask you how, why it's happening now, why it hasn't happened before, and kind of how your mindset has been. Because it seemed like for so long you guys were just touring with 100th and other hardcore bands over and over again, playing the same, like, 300 cap rooms. And kind of, I mean, I don't want to be insulting, but almost just sort of spinning your tires a little bit.
No, and like, that's absolutely how we felt too. Like, you know, it got to a point where we were, you know, it was right around like 2013, like right after Hell and Home came out. And it finally got to the point where we were like, yo, you know, we're playing these shows and we're like opening these packages and we're having better sets
yes.
than these other bands.
Yes.
You know, or it'll be like, you know, we're, you know, and like not even, I'm really not trying to like, you know, be rude or like, you know, have to like, come off as egotistical when I say this, but there was a tour that we did with Shai Hulud and A Plea for Purging. It was their co-headliner. And then it was us and Dead Icons. And I think that was like one of the first times where we were like, we were two of four.
And everyone's
and
looking
I remember,
at
people. Exactly. And, yeah. you know, and to like, for us, we were like, I don't get it. Like Shai Hulud's playing. Like what the hell do you, like, why are you leaving? You know? And I would mention that to kids, I'd be selling merch and they'd be like, okay, cool. Like, I'm actually going to go. Like, you guys are sick tonight. And I'm like, well, you're not going to stay and watch Shai Hulud or Plea for Purging? And they'd be like, no, not really. I don't really like those bands. And I was just like,
yeah,
this is crazy. And I think that was, you know, and if anybody in Shai Hulud or Plea for Purging is listening, like, I'm really not trying to be a dick. I'm
no, just, you're not being you know. A dick, though. You're telling it like it isn't. And they would have noticed, too. Like, I mean, I remember
sure.
Here's the difference, though. And here's kind of what I'm getting at is, like, I remember a tour we did, too. We did the Take Action tour in 2006. And yeah. we were direct support to Matchbook Romance. And it was the same thing. We were playing, and most of the show was leaving after we played. And sure. Matchbook Romance was not happy about it. But, you know, they're the ones getting paid, too.
That's what I'm saying. And
what happened, though, is after that we realized, we're like, okay, we're drawing people. So we booked a headline tour, and we played those rooms again, and we headlined. And then, you know, or we realized, okay, we can now support bigger bands, and our agent was able to get us bigger shows. But it seemed like you guys were doing that for years. Like, you guys were the underdog, like, playing 2 of 4 or direct support for bands that weren't drawing as much as you for years.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I think a big reason behind that is just not having like the ideal team behind your band. You know what I mean? Because after for a little while when Paul and Rich weren't managing us anymore, and we had other dudes, and we had, you know, a couple different booking agents, and really no like solid manager for a little while, it was really hard to be taken seriously, like, because there would be all these bands that have, you know, they have the good management, and they've got the good booking agent, and we would get these tour offers, and we'd be like, well, wait, like, we're only getting $200 and we're 2 of 4, like, we're bigger than all these bands. And then it would be like, well, you know, and then we would have a manager at the time be like, well, you should still take it because, you know, you want to get in that you want to get in good books with that booking agent and that manager. And then to me, I was just like, well, why don't I just go get that booking agent and manager to work for us, you know?
Yeah.
And
sure.
like, and nothing against them, but it was just kind of like, you know, I'm getting beaten over the head with like, you have to bend over backwards for this management company. And, you know, like, you got to bend over backwards for Good Fight. You got to bend over backwards for Agency Group. And then I was just like, well, then why the fuck aren't they working for us? Cause that seems like it would, you know, that seems like that would just completely, you know, that would change things. And then, so that was the next course of action, where we like sort of solidified our team a little bit. And then like, it was like night and day. Like, I remember, like, literally for the same tour, we originally got offered like 3 of 7. It was for like some huge tour.
Yeah.
And then we turned it down because the money was low. It was like, hey, you know, here's like $200 a night, what we were used to. And we're like, you know what? We're going to say no. Come back, you know, we get the new management, we get a new booking agent, like all that stuff. It starts falling into play immediately for the same tour. Hey, here's a direct support offer for like $400. And it's just like, yes, like, this is what we've been saying. Like, this is what we've been after.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that, and I think that it was, you know, it was just our fault for acting like, you know, out of haste and being like, well, somebody's better than nobody. And a lot of the times,
let's just get on the road.
That's not really the case, because, you know, when you have a manager, other managers aren't looking to, you know, they're not going to show interest, because no one wants to be the guy that, you know, swooped the band from somebody else. Like, no one's trying to have that reputation. So, you know, sometimes being a free agent isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world.
No.
Especially, well, you know, like for us, like when we were finally at Victory, it was like, you know, hey, we're not signed right now. Like, it was weird. There was a period in like, you know, I don't even remember, like, I guess like 2014, 2015, when like we were unsigned again, and we were just like, all right, motherfuckers, like, what do you got for us? Like, what are you going to do for us now? And, you know, you kind of just open the door, and then they start rolling in. But obviously none of those labels are going to come contacting us being like, hey, like, don't tell Victory, but hey, can we maybe, because no one, you know, that's just bad business practice. Like, no one's gonna do that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, it's not, so, I don't think it's even legal, but once you're free agents, did you guys get some sweet free dinners or anybody?
Oh yeah, that's always been cool, using that. Like, yeah, let's go out for dinner. It's like, oh yeah, sure thing, like, you know.
Yeah,
just, well, like, if I was good looking, maybe I'd go to a bar and try and get some free drinks, but whatever, same shit.
Well, you don't have to be good looking, you just have to be a good singer, right? So
true,
for
apparently.
Those labels to, yeah, well,
luck,
maybe
luck. But yeah, you know, and I think that, you know, we were just kind of in that funk and like in that underdog position, and like, honestly, I still think we are, because like you said, you know, there's all these tours that we just get completely passed over for, like Warped Tour, for example. You know, it's like, I think that we would be an amazing fit for the tour, and I think it'd be great. And then it's like, oh, we either didn't get an offer or the offer wasn't feasible for us, because it'd be like, well, why are we losing money? Like, you know, we're not a new band anymore. Like yeah. you said, we've basically been a band for coming on 10 years. It's like, I can't, you know, not that any of us have like crazy bills and we're all like, you know, in debt. Like I still live with my parents, but at the same time, it's like, well, I'm not going to go away and lose money when I can go get a job at a coffee shop in Hamilton and make more than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I get it. I mean, it was something like Warped Tour though. Sure. And I mean, you're, you know, I'm gonna quote you from like maybe 10 minutes ago when you said like
sure.
a lot of Canadian bands can make $1,000 across Canada and then they don't want to go into the US and only make $100 a night and lose
of
money
course.
So there it's a little short-sighted. Well, it's the for same sure. kind of thing with something like Warped Tour, and obviously yeah, you gotta get your foot
that.
In the door, and you know, but a big problem was like, you know, you guys are supporting like 100th, and even though you might be drawing as many or more people than them, they're yep. the ones that get the offer for a Warped Tour because they're the ones
course,
that were headlining that tour.
Yep. You know, 100%. I think that the other thing is that also comes into play too, is I think that, you know, us downplaying our band and like downplaying like that kind of stuff. Like, I don't think that's, you know, I don't think that's necessarily like just a trying to be modest thing. Like, we are actually scared. You know what I mean? Like when we first booked that, you know, like we've only done one headline tour in America, and it was the one that we just did with Expire and Gideon and Knock Loose. And I remember, like, you know, when we were booking that tour, I remember like being scared shitless, being like, man, if this doesn't go well, like this is literally it. Like,
well, yeah.
if this, you know, if these shows are bad, like we're probably fucking done. And it like really set in. And, you know how you get like ticket counts and stuff like beforehand.
Yeah.
They'll be like, yeah, there's this many pre-sales. We were getting them, and it was just like, you know, not that pre-sales are everything, because we're not, you know, we're not fucking 1975. Like, we're not selling out venues in advance, you know. But like, we were getting these pre-sales, and I remember day one. Day two was in Iowa City, and it's like one of our favorite places to play. Like, for whatever reason,
I love Iowa.
I mean,
I love Iowa City.
The city's amazing. Like, I love yeah. Iowa City. But the shows are always nuts, and so we booked the show at Blue Moose or whatever, like
yep.
upstairs.
Yep.
And it was downstairs. And the ticket count the day before was like 60, and we were all just like, God damn it! Like, it's done. It's like, you know, this is gonna be miserable. And then we walk in, and the promoter, and we're like, I'm like, hey, you know, how's pre-sale going? Like, last update I got was around 60. And he's like, 60? There's like 160 tickets. And I'm like, oh, fuck. All right. And then every day just got like a little bit better and better. And we were hearing like, hey, Chain sold out. Hey, like Webster sold out. Like all these places. And it lifted us up, because we were just like, yo, we were about to fucking break up if this tour didn't go well. And it's going like way better than we had ever hoped. And now, you know, now that we have it under our belts, I think things will start changing, you know?
Well, now, I mean, now you've proved it, right? Like, now you have those
sure.
headline numbers,
sure.
and now, you know, now that's the reason that you guys are, you know, doing tours with like Parkway Drive and stuff. Like, that's the
of
way
course.
It works. And that's the way you play the game. God, we've talked a lot about this music industry stuff, haven't we?
Yeah, for sure. But the thing is, like, you know, a lot of people that just come to shows and like don't see it from our side, like they don't really have any idea, you know what I mean? Like, there's kids that will come up and be like, you know, hey, next, like, you know, like there was kids when we announced that we came as Romans routing date stuff, there's kids that were like, hey, like, do you think like you could headline this show? And it's like, man, that's like, it really doesn't work like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for us, like, I you know, we always laugh and we're like, can we just headline, like, yeah, we'll just call We Came as Romans and say, oh, you know, how many millions of fucking records have you sold? Well, no, we're going to close tonight. And we all laugh about it. But then, you know, it kind of comes back and we're like, well, that's not really fair, because they don't really know the ins and outs of like
yeah.
this industry. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's, we can like exhaust ourselves talking about like the good and bad in it. But I think a lot of people that will listen to this, like, really won't have any idea that's
kind
of how things
work. No, I'm definitely certain. Like,
and it's pretty fucking sick.
Well, we're talking about things that I'm sure a lot of people listening are like, really? That's how it works? Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
with,
sure.
in terms of like money and
of course.
And headline numbers and you know, getting support tours. Like, that stuff is something that doesn't really get talked about in terms of publicity and interviews. So
for sure.
So yeah, man, absolutely.
There's so many people that think like, you know, like even for that Parkway Drive tour, like there's so many people that are like, oh, like why are you guys opening? And or you know, or like, well, like you know, this is a weird tour for you guys. Like, why would you guys take this? And it's like, aside from the fact that, you know, Killing with a Smile by Parkway Drive is like one of my favorite metalcore records ever. It's also like, well, you have to think like, how many times can we play? How many times can we tour with 100th and Being as an Ocean and Expire and Straight from the Path and Stick to Your Guns and Knock Loose? It's like, you know, you eventually have to branch out. And then once you kind of start explaining that to kids, like, okay, let's say, for example, there's going to be like 1,000 kids in a room on that tour. There's probably going to be like 200 that know who we are and like our band. And then there's going to be 800 kids that are hearing us for the first time. So then when we turn around and headline, you know, then if like 100 of those kids come out, that's 100 more kids every night
sure.
for our shows. And then in turn, we do the bigger shit. And then we get the Warped offers and
well,
we
there
get
you go, man.
The I offers mean, to go out with the Day to Remember. And when you explain that to people, they're really like, oh shit, I never thought of it like that. And it's like, you know, yeah, it's a business like anything else, right?
Yeah. Well, the other thing too, that you're not even thinking about is like just having the name Counterparts on the poster, like everybody going to see Parkway Drive, like people that are interested in music and care about new bands, they're going to go,
yep.
Well, oh, Counterparts, well, they're opening. Maybe I'll check out a few songs. And
for
maybe
sure.
they'll like
if
really
Parkway
like your
Drive
band.
Thinks they're cool, I'll probably think
right.
they're cool.
Right, and that's a big thing, too, is just being on that tour and getting that exposure. But you just said, like, you put so much value in your headline show, in your headline numbers. You put, like, so much value in it that you're like, if only 60 people in Iowa show up, well, we're gonna break up.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, like, literally. And that was our mindset.
You need to do everything in your power to make sure that doesn't happen, which includes, you know, supporting bigger artists that you know,
yeah,
you can
for sure.
support.
And I love opening tours. Like, I think it's the sickest thing in the world. Like, on Parkway, the venues are going to be fairly big. Like, a lot of them are like House of Blues and stuff like that.
Yep.
I'm so looking forward to like doors being open at 7, like maybe a local band, maybe not. We play, and then like, you know, I can shower and like settle with the promoter and get ready to go probably before We Came as Romans or even like on song one. And then it's just like, then we just get to hang out all night. Like, that's,
yeah,
you know, as opposed to, okay, doors are what, 6, and we play at 11? Like, oh, fuck. And we just like sit yep. there and I gamble for 5 hours and lose all my money. And then, you know, then it's like, oh, shit, I just lost $100 today and now I have to go play a show. You know, it's
– You're a gambler? Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's,
what are you it's, gambling?
It's getting bad.
What are you gambling
on? Tour, we play – on tour, we play a lot of 31. We play a lot of dice. Lately, because we've been off for so long, we've been playing poker a lot in my basement.
Dude,
we all got
me-
in like –
You need to have me down, man.
Dude, 100%. If you're down to play poker, come through. Like,
oh, I'm a
sick.
Poker. I'm a poker guy. I'll absolutely come. And I'm out in Oakville right now too, so I'm not even far away from you.
Okay, perfect.
So
yeah,
seriously, give me a call. I'm definitely down. But
absolutely. Also, if you're into Magic the Gathering, we got into that real hard in the past couple weeks. So
I'm
that's
not,
another
if,
thing too.
If that's something I can pick up relatively quickly, sure. What the hell? Why not? I mean,
honestly,
I'm playing Pokemon
I it up
now,
in like
so.
A week. Yeah, yeah, it's like honestly, if like any card game, it's very similar. Like I was really like, you know, I'm not learning that shit. There's like 20,000 cards, like no fucking way. And you know, a good friend of mine, Calvin, like pretty much like sat me down and was like, "Yo, I'm teaching you how to play this game right now. It's sick." He taught me, and now I'm like, yeah, I guess I like Magic now. So, but I think a lot of it comes from the fact that we've been off for 5 months, so it's just like. Anything I can do to pass time, I'm like, yep, sure. Like, you know, oh, what's that new show? Like, oh yeah, fuck, I'll try and binge watch Stranger Things, or
yeah.
I'll do anything because like I don't want to sit and stare at my wall anymore. I hate it.
So you've been off for 5 months, really?
Yeah, we've been home since April.
Why? Are you guys writing? Are you writing a new record or anything?
We are writing. Yeah, yeah,
oh, okay.
Now that we have, you know, our new guitar player Blake has joined the band, and you know we've he's been here when we did that little weekend run.
Yep.
We actually ended up writing a couple songs then, and you know we're looking to record early next year, so a summer release would probably I think it's possible, but then again, you know, more music industry shit, like I don't know how long it takes to press vinyl,
right?
But,
yeah, a long time,
but yeah, a lot of it you know, a lot of it came from the fact that we had the Architects tour booked. you know, and then sadly Tom died.
God,
and,
damn, that's,
you know,
really,
and
sad.
Everything like that. It's the worst, you know. Yeah. And shout out to those guys and
big,
you know,
time, yeah.
R.I.P. Tom, like that.
I hope they're doing it, hanging in there. That's real tough.
Me too. I really think that they are, you know, and like it sucks. You know, not that I wish it on anybody, but it's like they're literally, you know, like some of the best people I've met. Like I put them up in the category with, you know, like I do with you guys, where it's like, you know, we were this like this opening band, like struggling, and you know, people were kind of not respecting us and kind of fucking us up like over a little bit. And what you guys did for us with, like, you know, with Prophets and everything, like that's what Architects did when we were touring with them in 2011 when we met.
Wow.
You know, like they've been to bat for us so many times. Like I've literally walked into like Sam screaming in a promoter's face about like when we're supposed to play because no one's in the room yet and shit like that. And it's
nice.
Just like,
that's,
you know,
awesome,
to hear that, you know, they're going through that. And
you
know, a good friend of mine passed away. Like it was fucked. We're all severely bummed out about it, but you know, it's a part of life, I guess. You just have to fucking deal with it. It's actually like the first time I've ever experienced something like that. So it's very weird to me. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel, but you know, I've written about it before. It's like, fuck, what can you do? You just gotta,
it's pretty crushing.
Live.
I mean, the worst that I had happen in that realm was when we were on tour with Bayside in 2005 and they got in an accident and their drummer died. And
absolutely,
literally, like, you know, we were at the hospital, and that ruined me for a better part of a year. I wasn't really right for about a year. So it is really amazing, you know, that the power of that. And, you know, I think, you know, there's no shame if, you know, there's no shame in getting help. There's no shame. I should have,
of course,
you know, I should have got help for it. And,
definitely.
And instead I, you know, did things I shouldn't have done and whatever, but you know, it is really true about how much that can affect people. And this got dark in a hurry. Damn, dude.
It did.
But I do want to talk about,
you know,
something else, though. I want to talk about the departure of Jesse from your band. Obviously, he's a big time songwriter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now,
that was a huge one.
Yeah. So I mean, now are you concerned a lot about? Are you concerned at all about him leaving the band? Your sound changing? Is he going to be working with you guys in any capacity, writing at all as well?
He won't be. I think I truly think that Jesse's just like, you know, he's just done with this, you know, this genre of music and this world. I think over the past couple years, like, you know, obviously when someone says like, yo, I'm leaving, it's a huge blow and you're like, what the fuck? Like that came out of nowhere. But then you kind of step back and, you know, think about it and think about what happened. And all of a sudden you're just like, you know what? Maybe this isn't a surprise. Like maybe I should have just been more observant with the way things go. And like nothing, like not in a bad way. He's just like, he's just fucking over it. You know what I mean? He didn't like touring. He, you know, and then I think it got to the point where he was like, I don't want to write this stuff anymore. So, you know, and we were all worried for sure. And we knew before we went on the headliner. So I think that was also in the back of our minds, like, okay, if the headliner goes bad and we're losing our like main songwriter, like we're fucking done. Like there's no way we're bouncing back from this.
Absolutely.
But the tour ended up being amazing. And then, you know, we were a little bit worried. Like I'm very competent. Like Adrian's an amazing guitar player. He's an amazing songwriter too. Same with Brian, our bass player. Like he played guitar in his old band. And then pretty much as soon as Blake came on board and we were jamming and, you know, he was already like, yo, I have ideas for songs. Like, can I send them? And he did. And we were getting them. And then when he was here and, you know, like him and I like literally wrote a song like in my basement together. Like that was the first time, aside from the instrumental song on Prophets, like that was the first time I'd ever like written guitar for the band. And it actually, you know, and then so all these songs kind of came together and, you know, we're listening back on these demos we have and I'm just like, why are we, well, you know, oh, fuck, I was an idiot to be worried because, you know, the cool thing about the band is like, you know, we're obviously going to go record with Will Putney again and it's like, he's not going to let us put out shit. Like, he's not going to want to put his name on something that isn't 100%. So at the very least, like maybe we're delusional and we're just excited and we give him all these songs and we're like, this is a record. He'll still be like, nah, this fucking sucks. Like, let's, you know, we gotta fix this shit. So I'm really not worried.
So he's kind of like the sixth member of the band at this point.
He really is. Like, everybody at that studio, honestly, like him, Randy, Steve, like Tom when he was working there, like all those guys, like they, you know, not that we were like fucking, you know, I've seen some of the stuff they've done for other bands and how bands just like kind of give them a bunch of money and say, write the record for us. Like, it wasn't like that, but it was just, it's kind of like coaching, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this song's really cool, but you can do better. And I'd be like, yeah, you're fucking right. I can write a better line than that. And then I would do it and it would force me to get my brain working. And that's, you know, that's a good producer, I think. Like, you know, any producer can be like, oh, give me the fucking guitar, I'll record it. Like, give me the guitar, I'll write the part. But, you know, to actually like get the best product out of somebody else, I think that's like, that's the reason why we like working with Will so much. So, you know, you combine that and the fact that Blake is like an unbelievable guitar player. And I mean, like, he was in 100. So it's like, fuck, you know, at the very least for everyone listening, like, we'll probably have, you know, the style isn't too different. So don't worry. It's not like he was in fucking, you know, some death metal band and I'm going to start doing pig squeals again.
Well, but, you know, you're well, you know, your record. I mean, your records have progressed. You know, every record is not the same.
I think
you know,
too.
So I don't think people should be too concerned. And you know, obviously, you guys are conscious about this. You know,
for
so,
sure. Yeah.
So I think it's going to be all right. But
yeah, of course. And like, obviously, I think the main thing that people don't get, like, when, you know, because we obviously saw the comments, like, oh fuck, Jesse's leaving. Like, oh, I don't know if they're gonna be able to come back from this. Like, I don't know if Counterparts is gonna sound the same and all that shit. And it's like, do you think we would put out something shitty? Like, do you, like, this is you know, Counterparts is literally my entire life. It's everything. It's when I wake up till I go to sleep. Like, it's the only thing that I care about. It's like everything else I've lost interest. I've like, you know, there's people I've lost interest in, like everything is temporary, but this fucking band for me right now. And it's like, do people really think that I'm going to jeopardize that? Like, do people really think I'm like, you know, oh, you know what? Like, touring the world and getting paid to fucking go to all these sick cities and eat sushi every single night of my life is like, that sucks. You know, like, I want to go, you know, I want to go back to working a job that I hate. Like, that sounds so sick. It's like, what, are you nuts? Like, why would I, you know, Why would I ever blow this opportunity?
Sure,
you know, like,
man.
And to go back to what you were saying about the legacy, like, you know, being conscious of this like legacy that you're leaving behind.
Yeah.
Do we want to be the band that's like, oh yeah, like that record was cool. Yeah, the next three were cool, and that's where it turned to dog shit, and I don't like them anymore. Like, really think that's, you know, like,
that that's what you want to, that's what you're going to do, or what you're going to try to do, or you're going to phone it in. The
For sure.
Reality, though, is that making good records isn't easy. It takes fucking work and time and effort, and, you know, a lot of things have to click. Otherwise, everybody would be out there making great records, and that doesn't happen. So I think that is what the fear, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of it, and you know, that fear was very real. Like, we were all like hanging out together, just like, all right, what do we do? Like, Jesse's leaving. I asked everyone, I was like, all right, are we, you know, is it over? Like, are we fucking hanging it up? Are we going to like book a final tour, or are we going to like keep going and like give it 100% like we always do? And, you know, put out the fucking, you know, the next chapter of Counterparts. Like, you know, like it's essentially a story, and we're, you know, or like a TV show, and we're getting into season 10 right now. Like, come January, like that's season 10.
Yeah.
And we're, you know what I mean? And we're like, you know, we're not about to fucking, you know, like it's,
you're not going to pull a Lost or anything.
Of course. Yeah. We're not trying to pull the, you know, we're not going to leave people hanging. We're not trying to do like the Twin Peaks season 2 finale. Like, we're not, you know, we're literally like, you know, we all want to do this. And it's, I think everybody's on the same page. At least that's what they, you know, that's what they project. And we're all the most excited about playing in the band than we have been in like years.
Well,
so,
I mean, it's an exciting time. I mean, you guys have the biggest shows you've ever played. Of course. And you know, you got some, I mean, you've had some time to write a record and figure it out, That's really great looking forward, man. I'm excited for you guys, and you know, obviously I've had your back since day one.
Yeah, of course.
It's really great,
day
man.
One, like, yeah, like you guys were, you know, coming up, like, I always tell the story, like, there was a period when, you know, 99% of bands in Ontario, like, hated us for fucking some reason.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
You guys and I'm Committing a Sin were the bands that were like, okay, these guys are fucking stupid. Like, Counterparts are sick and we want to help them. And it's like directly because of that that we got any of this.
There was like an amount of shit talking and almost bullying early in the Hamilton scene. Like, I don't want to 100%. Name names, but like, it was kind of fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. And like, what I think it was is the fact that, you know, what I tell myself I think it was, and not the fact that we suck, is that, you know, we were doing really well and we were like 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
And so the other dudes in these other bands were like, you know, mid-20s, like, or later, and they were kind of just like, who's this fucking kid, like, has, you know, like,
it was jealousy. Like, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, who are these fucking kids? Like, oh, they're playing a show tonight and they have to go to fucking comm tech and math class tomorrow morning. Like, they, you know, and they were, and you know, I think that a lot of it came from being threatened. You know, they were felt like they were threatened. Yeah. And, you know, obviously, like, back in those times, like, I definitely had like a big mouth and I was like a problematic dumbass. Like, I think it was just, it went from, I don't know, I think it's because I like didn't drink and I didn't really know how else to have fun. So I was like, I'm just gonna like pick a fight with somebody and fuck it. And that was like, okay. You know, that's how I had fun back then.
Okay.
But for whatever reason, like, I really, like, I truly don't think that we like started any beef that we had, because we were always like really nice, and we were always, you know, we would always like, you know, we were playing with these bands in the Ontario scene that we literally idolized. Like, we would go see them. You know, and then that's why we started a band, because we were like, well, they live around the corner from me and they're fucking doing well and people love their music and they get to go on tour, so we want to do it. And we would always ask for advice and we'd always ask for help, and it seems like everybody but you guys and I'm Committing a Sin and the bands that we were actually friends with were just kind of like, you know, they just wrote us off, and they were, for some reason, they were super rude. And like, you know, and to be fair, I've had conversations with a lot of those people now, and a lot of them have like made it a point to express how like shitty they feel about it. And like, you know, I really try not to like hold grudges anymore. And
well, I guess you got to wonder how much of it is them really feeling that way. And how much is it like, oh shit, Counterparts is like a big band now, we want to open for them, and my band hasn't gone anywhere in the last,
for sure.
Nine
and
years.
Like that,
you know,
yeah,
I mean, I don't want to say that,
like,
but you know, and I hope it's not true, but
yeah, I mean, but like, I've definitely, you know, I feel like I've gotten both. Like, I've gotten the dude that's genuinely sorry for shit talking us and they make it a point and I like buy it. And then there's obviously the other dude that's like, hey man, remember like we used to play together, like you guys need an opener for that like show you're doing. And it's just kind of like, yeah, I remember when we used to play together, when you used to like make fun of us on stage and shit, like that sucks. So why the fuck would I help you now? You know what I mean? Like, but you know, like I said, I really don't, and it just comes with, you know, getting older and stuff. And like, I'm 25 now. So the beefs that I had when I was 17 years old, like, I don't think about that shit really. Like, you know, I'm only really on the topic because we were discussing, you know, the scene back in the day.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. Well, it's a big part of who, you know, our relationship and where we grew up and who we are. So
for sure. And, yeah, and the one thing I really try to do to combat that is, because we had such a hard time, like, I try to be what you guys and I'm Committing a Sin and, you know, the other bands that helped us out did for us. I try and do that for other bands in the Ontario scene now. Like even, you know, and not even because I'm like trying to get this like, oh, like Brendan's a good guy. It's just like, yo, like you see it now. Like, there's so many Ontario bands that are signed, like us, Rarity, Seaway, Cold Front, like all these bands are popping up and like touring the US. And I'm just like, this is so fucking sick.
Yeah.
Because now on stage, when I say, yeah, we're from Hamilton, Ontario, someone will go, wait, Rarity's from there. You know? And like, people start, it's not like, hey, we're from that tiny country, Canada. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's, we have the Tragically Hip there. Like, that's really it. You know, it's like, you know, it, like, people start recognizing, like, oh shit, there's like sick bands in Canada, you know, like fucking like Pacific and Safe to Say we're on Warped Tour this year. Like, you know, there's so many cool bands that are popping out of Ontario. And I love that American kids are like, yo, Canada, it's only like 5 hours away and they have sick bands too. So I'm going to get into some Canadian bands.
No, absolutely. And it, there, we went through a lull, man. There was a while where like, it 100%. Seemed like you guys seemed like kind of the last of it. And then for a few years, it seemed like there's nothing coming out of our area.
Yeah.
You know, and I was starting to get worried and then like, yes, then Seaway kind of came out and now there's all those other bands you mentioned and it really is a good time for the Ontario a scene. So I'm excited about it too.
Me too. I think, you know, I think Canadian music and like Ontario specifically is, you know, we're doing really well. Like it's getting to the point where it was back when it was like, you know, oh, like what are the big bands? Like, you know, you've got like Servicene, Dead Nevine, Holly Springs, Sydney, The Gorgeous, like all these
Alexis
bands.
Alexis on Fire.
Alexis on Fire. Like,
Boys Night Out.
Yeah, 100%. Like, like there's so many bands that like fucking Roses Dead, like, you know, every band from that area, like, you know, we're starting to get back to that. And I think that that's so important because that was when I was having the most fun living in Ontario. Like that was when, you know, there was a show twice a week in Hamilton, Burlington, Oakville, like whatever. Yep. You didn't have to travel super far. And like, if I can, you know, anything I can do to help get the scene back to that, like that's what I want to do. Like, you know, and I'm really trying to think of ways to do it that don't require me like taking out a loan and opening up a venue. But
hey, man,
hey, fuck
let's
it.
Do it.
I can
let's
dream,
go in
right?
on it together, man. Let's open a venue.
I'd be down. That'd be so sick.
It would be sick, actually. But hey, all right, man. Hey, I got to let you go. This conversation.
Cool.
This conversation's been amazing, man. I will let you
go.
Yeah, it's been great. Dude, anything else to add before, you know, anything else you want to say to the people before we hang it up?
Nothing really. I would like it if anyone listening could go back and listen to it from start to finish and count how many times I say, you know, or like in the conversation.
Uh-huh. Yeah, just, how many likes?
Email me a tally, preferably by hand, both of them, because, you know, it's either that or I have to wait and like just hear about it forever. So like just send it to me directly and I'll work on it.
I wonder if we had any boots or A's in there.
Oh, probably.
That's what I'm wondering, because the yeah, Americans will love that.
Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
We'll
oh, yeah, for sure,
it.
Eh?
Oh, fucking right.
Sorry
eh?
About your hoose. Yeah. No, man. Well, hey, thanks again for your time, Brendan. And
no problem, man.
Yeah, man.
Thanks
it's great, 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 great catching up.
Cool. You too, man. Take care.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
Peace.
So there it is, my conversation with Brendan of Counterparts. Dude just cracks me up. I don't even know if he means to, but he fucking kills me. So nice to have him on the show. All the best for Counterparts with the future. I know they have some changes and stuff, but I know they're going to kill it. Can't wait. By the way, like I mentioned, I did put out their first record, Profits, on my label, Verona Records. So if you're interested in vinyl or CDs or whatever, check it out again, veronarecords.com. I'm actually going to play a song from that first Counterparts record, Profits. Here is Digression on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.